Osho, the invitation. Responses to disciples' questions given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 9.
Beloved Bhagwan, my friend Chintan is just starting 6 months of heavy chemotherapy. You have already sent him such beautiful messages for his meditation while passing through this. Now, Bhagwan, do you have some jokes for him too?
Chintan is certainly passing through a difficult stage, but everybody has to pass through. Finally, the difficult stage of death. And only a meditator is capable of passing through it as if it is a joke. He can pass through it laughing and singing because he knows that the fire cannot burn him and the death cannot destroy him. There is no sword that can cut him. He belongs to the eternal life. Once a small glimpse of the eternity is achieved, there is no life. Which can be destroyed by anything. It can be removed from one form into another, but death cannot do more than that, just changing of the house. To the non-meditator, death is the end. To the meditator, a beginning, a new beginning, a fresh beginning, freed from the old, rotten body. Old mind. It is a resurrection. Every death is a resurrection. But if you don't know it, you will die unconsciously, without experiencing the beauty of resurrection. If you can die consciously, death is only a door into a new life on a higher plane. But to die consciously, one has to live consciously. You cannot manage to die consciously without a long meditative conscious life. Only a conscious life is rewarded with a conscious death. It is a reward, but only to the conscious man. To the unconscious man, it is the end of all his efforts, ambitions, desires. There is only darkness ahead, not a single light. And no possibilities left. Death simply takes away the whole future. Naturally, the unconscious man is immensely afraid and deeply trembling, knowing that death is coming every day closer. Since your birth, the only thing has been certain, and that is death. Everything else is uncertain and accidental. Only death is not accidental. It is absolute certainty. There is no way to avoid it or dodge it. It will catch hold of you in the right moment, at the right place. I have always loved the beautiful Sufi story. A king dreams in the night that a dark shadow is putting her hand on his shoulder. He looks back. He is horrified. It is just a dark shadow. But the shadow speaks and says, there is no need to be worried. I have just come to inform you. It is not routine. You are a great king. It is an exception. Otherwise, I never come to inform anybody. I come without any information. The king said, but who you are? The dark shadow laughed and said, I am your death. And be prepared, tomorrow as the sun will be setting, I am going to come to you. Naturally, this nightmare woke him up. Even after he was awake, knowing well that it was only a dream, but he was trembling and perspiring, and his heart was beating. So loudly, he could hear it himself. He immediately called the council of all his wise men, and particularly the royal astrologer, prophets, and told them the dream and asked them the meaning of it. Is it true that death is going to happen? The astrologers may be able to figure it out. And the wise men, the philosophers, the astrologers, the prophets, all started arguing about the dream. Perhaps it is the first dream analysis. But they could not come to any conclusion. Just as they cannot come to any conclusion today. All the dream analysts, the so-called psychoanalysts, differ in their interpretation. You take the same dream to all and you will get different conclusions about the dream. You will be more confused than ever. And so was the situation. From the middle night till the morning, the king became more and more confused, because everybody was saying something different. And when the sun started rising, the old man who used to serve the king he was not only a servant, he has helped the king from his very childhood. He has taken care of him because his mother has died. And his father has appointed the man because he was his most trustworthy bodyguard to take care of the child. So the king respected him almost like his father. The old man said in his ears, whispered, that these great thinkers and philosophers and astrologers, they have argued for centuries, and they have never come to any conclusion. Do you think they will come to any conclusion within 12 hours? Forget. That is not possible. These are the people who know only how to argue. They never come to any conclusion. They argue well. But the question is not the beauty of the argument. The question is, what is the conclusion of all your philosophies? There is no conclusion at all. No two philosophers agree with each other. The king asked him, then, what do you suppose? He said, my understanding is, let them discuss, there is no harm. But you take our fastest horse and get away as far as possible from the palace. This place is dangerous to be, at least for the coming 12 hours. After the sun has set, you can start returning back, but not before that. It looked practical. And these people can go on argue, there is no need to stop them. If they come to any conclusion, I will follow immediately. And the West Bay is towards Damascus, another capital of another kingdom. So I know if I have to find you to give the conclusion, I will be coming behind you. The king was convinced of the old man. He left all those great philosophers discussing and slipped slowly out of the palace with the best horse he had. The whole day the horse was running as fast as possible. They did not stop to eat or even to drink water. It was not a time to think of water or food. And the horse seemed to be in a certain understanding that it is a very critical moment for his master. They reached near Damascus, outside the city, as the sun was setting. They stopped in a mango grove, and as he was tying the horse with a tree, he petted the horse and he said, you proved to be a great friend. You have never run so fast before. You must have understood my situation. And we have come hundreds of miles away. And the sun is setting, and as the sun set, he immediately felt the same hand on the shoulder from his back. And the shadow was there, and the shadow said, I also have to thank your horse. I was worried whether you will be able to reach in this place in the right time or not. That's why I had come to inform you. This is the place destined for your death, and your horse has brought you right in time. Whether you run or you stay, it doesn't matter. Death comes. Death has started coming closer to you from the very moment you were born. Now, in what form it comes does not matter. Bertrand Russell has said that if there was no death in the world, there would have been no religion. He has some great insight there. Without death, who was going to bother about meditation? Without death, who was going to bother to know about the secret mysteries of life? One would have remained always concerned with the mundane and the worldly. Who would have turned inwards? There would have been no Gautam Buddha. So death is not just a calamity. It is a blessing in disguise. If you can understand, if you have this much intelligence that after birth death is approaching every moment closer, you will not lose your time in trivia. Your priority will be to know what this life is before it ends. Who is living in me? What force? For every intelligent man and woman, this is the priority. Everything else is secondary. To know oneself. And once you know oneself, there is no death. Death was only in your ignorance. In your meditative consciousness, death disappears just as darkness disappears when there is light brought in. Meditation brings the light in, and death is found to be the greatest fiction. It appears only from the outside that somebody is dying. From the inside, nobody has ever died. And that is where your life source is. Chintan is taking his death very joyously. Very peacefully. He will die consciously. He is giving every indication that death cannot make him unconscious, cannot knock him unconscious. He will retain his consciousness. And he will have a laughter as he will be dying. Because the whole world is living in an illusion. Life is neither born nor dies. It has been before birth, it will be after death. Birth and death both are small episodes in the eternal stream of consciousness and life. garima, you are asking some jokes for him. Giovanni bumps into his friend Alfredo on the streets of Rome and notices that his friend is looking very depressed. How was your holiday in a Miami beach? He asks. Mamma mia, replies Alfredo, it was a terrible. I go to Miami and check into a bigger hotel. In the morning, I go down to eat a breakfast. I tell the waitress, I want two pieces toast. She bring me only one. Only one piece. I tell her, I want two pieces. She say, go to the toilet. I say, you no understand. I want two piece on the plate. She say, you better no piece on the plate. You son of a bitch. I don't even know the lady and she call me son of a bitch. Later I go eat at the bigger restaurant. The waitress brings me a spoon and knife, but no fork. I tell her, I want a fork. She tell me, everyone want a fork. I tell her, you no understand. I want a fork on the table. She say, you better not fork on a table. You son of a bitch. So I go back to my room in a hotel and there is no seats on my bed. I call the manager and tell him, I wanna sit. He tell me to go to the toilet. I say, you not understand. I wanna sit on my bed. He say, you better not sit on my bed. You son of a bitch. I go to the checkout desk and the man at the desk say, happy holidays, peace to you. I say, piss on you too. You son of a bitch. I gonna go back to Italy. Just tell Chintan avoid Italy and go anywhere else you want.
Beloved Bhagwan, you say everybody is beautiful. Can you talk about the beauty of Ronald Reagan?
Prem Samarpan. Everybody is certainly beautiful. When I say this, I mean potentially. I do not mean actually. If actually everybody was beautiful, this world would have been a paradise. Potentially everybody is beautiful. Yes, even Ronald Reagan. But the actuality is what matters. Actually, he is the ugliest man today. Adolf Hitler, number one. Gaddafi has called him Adolf Hitler, number two. I made a statement that Gaddafi should correct his statement. He is not Adolf Hitler number two. He is Adolf Hitler number one. The real poor Adolf Hitler has become number two. Adolf Hitler had very small power. Ronald Reagan has millions times more power. And he is as fascist and as fanatic as any Adolf Hitler. This is the actuality. Everybody is beautiful, but everybody does not prove. To be beautiful because very few people attain to their potential. They go astray. They don't grow to be what they were born to be. They grow in an insane society, and naturally learn the whole art of being insane. Because here, whoever is more insane will be the winner. The same person will stand out of the race, and the insane will not take any note. Whatever happens to him or to others, and whatever the cost, he is going to be on the top. Your presidents and your prime ministers are your most insane people. Their right place is in madhouses, but they are ruling the whole world. In 3,000 years, they have managed 5,000 wars. And the insanity has gone growing. It has not been stable. Today it has reached to its peak. And Ronald Reagan is almost standing on the Everest of nuclear weapons, ready to destroy the whole life on this beautiful planet. Hence, I have to make this strange statement that I love him, I respect him as a human being, if he comes back to sanity. But he is going more and more insane and senile. Retarded he has always been. It was perfectly good that he should have remained in Hollywood as a cowboy actor. When he became the president, he started behaving in the same way as if he is acting in a cowboy film. It is real life. It is not a film. But he has not been able to actualize the fact when he became the president, he had come to the White House with his only friend, a chimpanzee. Now, if you cannot find any friendship in human beings, and you find friendship with a chimpanzee, it shows something about you. It also shows something about the chimpanzee. That he is an intelligent fellow. On the first day, they had gone both for a walk on the beach. An old drunkard watched these two fellows he could not believe, and he could not resist the temptation either. He went close to them and said, "Mr. President, it does not look right to have a chimpanzee as your friend. It is humiliating to the whole America." And as Ronald Reagan was going to say something, he said, "You shut up, I am talking to Mr. President." this man has gone completely astray, and he's now the most powerful man in the hands of a great insane person, is so much power that you are living moment to moment in a tremendous risk. He can blow up the whole earth just by pushing a button. And I don't think that he will hesitate to do it. His fanatic and fascist mind is capable of doing any idiotic thing. He has behaved with me, with my people, with the commune. A group of meditators in a desert just 5,000 people in a vast desert of 126 square miles, far away from any American town, at least 20 miles away from any town, and he became so much interested in destroying the commune, which has not done any harm to him or to his country, just because he could not tolerate a peaceful commune, joyous and happy and celebrating, and as hundreds of news media people and visitors from all over America started coming to see what is happening, how we have transformed in 5 years the desert into a beautiful oasis. Just my garden has 300 peacocks, and the commune had almost 2,000 to 3,000 deers. It was such a dream come true that as the news started spreading in America, Ronald Reagan began to fear that people will ask that if these people can even turn a desert into an oasis and can live so beautifully and so peacefully with no court, with no law, with no government, why not the richest country of the world should not live as peacefully and as joyously and as lovingly? Why there should be in America 30 million beggars on the street. And we had absorbed in our commune few hundred beggars, and those beggars could not believe when we behaved with them on equal terms. They wrote letters to me that for the first time we have recognized that we are also human beings. You have given us dignity and respect. Otherwise, we were almost treated like dogs, astray dogs. Ronald Reagan and his government became absolutely antagonistic for the simple reason because we were so successful in creating a utopia. He could not tolerate us. He destroyed the commune. He had the power. He arrested me for no reason. He fined me 60 lakh rupees for no crime. And after I was deported from America and the commune was crushed, now where there were 5,000 people and where every year on the festival days for 1 month there used to be 20,000 sannyasins, a great festival of love and joy and meditation and silence and creativity. After I was out of America, his own Attorney General gave the statement to a press conference. That they had no evidence of any crime against me. Hence they could not send me to jail. Moreover, they did not want to make me a martyr. That shows their deep desire. They wanted to kill me. But they prevented themselves because that may have strengthened the sannyas movement around the world. And thirdly, he said, our priority was just to destroy the commune and not allow Bhagwan for 15 years into America. And I was not thinking that they will continue their harassment. Even today, that harassment continues. They have forced all the governments of the world to pass laws that I cannot enter, not only America, but any country in Europe. Now this is absolutely criminal. Wherever I was, he forced the government to deport me from there. Just the other day I found one archbishop of Greece has been caught on the airport of Paris hiding a large amount of heroin in his religious paraphernalia. And I was deported from Greece. I was just a tourist. I was going there only for 2 weeks more. 2 weeks I had already been there. I was deported on the demand of the Archbishop, the highest authority of Greek Orthodox Church, on the grounds that my presence in Greece will destroy its tradition, will destroy its religion, will destroy its morality. I could not believe that we are living in 20th century. I had not left even my house, compound. And if a religion, morality, a church 20 centuries old, because Greek church is the oldest church as far as Christianity is concerned, can be destroyed by a tourist in 2 weeks' time, is it worth saving? But the force behind was Ronald Reagan. In Uruguay, I was given 1 year residence permit. The president was interested. He has been reading my books. And he was very happy that I have come to Uruguay. That will open the door of Uruguay to international visitors, sannyasins. It is a poor country and it will be a good economic help to the country. It is a beautiful country, a small country. But as I was given 1 year residence permit, immediately special agents from Ronald Reagan reached, and Ronald Reagan himself phoned to the president of Uruguay that Bhagwan has to be deported within 36 hours. You have a choice. If you want to keep him in Uruguay, you can, but then you have to return all the money that has been given to you as loans in the past that comes to billions of dollars, and the money that you are going to get in the coming 2 years that also comes to billions of dollars, that will be cancelled. You can choose. The secretary of the president told me that I had seen for the first time tears in the eyes of the president. And he said, Bhagwan's coming to Uragve at least has made one thing clear to us, that we are living in an illusion, that we are independent. We are not even free to accept a guest in our country. Now America is blackmailing. They know that we cannot pay all the loans we don't have. And we cannot afford the future loans to be withdrawn, because all our plans for the coming 5 years will have to be dropped. Our whole economy will collapse. He agreed that I will send Bhagwan away, although it is against our legal code and against the constitution of Uragve, that once you give a man 1 year residence, unless he commits some heinous crime, murder, rape, or something of that category, you cannot take away his residential status. But I am ready to commit something against the Constitution. I will send him, I will persuade him to leave himself. But Ronald Reagan insisted that no, he has to be deported, he has not to be persuaded to leave. And the president begged that this is going too far. In the first place, he has every right to stay, because he has not committed any sin. He never goes out of his house. Secondly, to deport him, what cause we will show? President Ronald Reagan was stubborn that that is not our problem, but he has to be deported. The president tried . He sent a messenger to me that you shift your jet plane from the international airport to a small airport nearby, and from there you leave, because the American embassy is watching on the international airport, so there will be no need for us to deport you. But American detectives must be watching the president also, and they must be watching me also. Before I reached to the small airport, the American ambassador was there ahead of us. And he has phoned the president that send all the officials with all the necessary documents for deportation. Without deportation, he cannot be allowed to leave the country. I was deported. I had to be stopped for 2 hours on that small airport, and for no reason. But they have made my passport a historical document. I have been deported from 21 countries without any reason, against 21 countries' constitution. His idea has been to close me the whole world and then enforce the Indian government, which he is doing continuously, that no sannyasins are allowed to reach. I have been informed by my friends from Washington that the Attorney General said, our whole effort will be that Bhagwan is completely silenced. And one reporter asked, what do you mean by silence? Do you mean he should be assassinated? The Attorney General said, no, we don't mean that, but it will be almost assassination. The strategy is no other country allows me, and my country, of course, cannot deport me, but it can prevent people from reaching me. Many television companies have written that we are continuously being refused. We are asking to come to Pune and they immediately refuse. And they don't give any reason why. Newspapers have been refused to reach. Thousands of sannyasins have been not only rejected visas from all over the world, thousands have already somehow got the visa, because now I have taken away the orange robe, the mala, so they cannot figure out whether the person is a sannyasin or not. And I am not a serious man, so I have told to my sannyasins, if they ask, you simply ask, who is this man, Bhagwan? Do you want us to go to him? Where is Pune? We were never thinking, but you seem to be interested. So many people have got visas, but they have been returned from Bombay airport, from Calcutta airport, back to their countries. Because here, American government has given the whole list of the people who were living in the commune. And here they are asking continuously that every sannyasin who is here, his whole address, how long he is going to be here, should be given to the police commissioner, so that even if you have reached one time, next time you cannot reach. We have not given any names, we have asked them on what grounds you are asking. If you are asking one religious institution, you should ask all the religious institutions of the country that anybody who comes there, they should keep a record and give every day a report. And And if you want, you can open an office before the ashram, and anybody who comes, you can take his name. That is your business, that is not our business. It is not our concern, and it is against our philosophy and religion to discriminate between people of different countries, or different races, or different colors. And we will not do anything against our own thinking. So they are at a loss what to do. Because if they do anything against the constitution, we are going to fight. But Ronald Reagan goes on insisting. The American embassy goes on insisting, the Indian government, that prevent people are reaching there. Twice American embassy has been here to watch how many people are around the ashram. And now the police commissioner asks us why the American embassy comes again and again to ashram. This is strange. You should ask the American embassy. How do we know? And why we should bother? If all the embassies of the world start coming, it is perfectly good. We are not doing here anything criminal. But this man has lost his humanity. Prem Samarpan, you say, everybody is beautiful. But everybody does not actualize his beauty, does not actualize his consciousness. Everybody is capable of enlightenment. But that does not mean that Ronald Reagan is enlightened. Everybody is beautiful, but that does not mean that when you see a beautiful cobra, you should not avoid it. Even if you are enlightened, please avoid it. Appreciate the beauty, but avoid it. What is the difference between a dead snake lying in the road and a dead politician lying in the road? Whom you will avoid first? If dead Ronald Reagan is lying on the road, and a dead snake is lying on the road, I suggest, although both are beautiful, but avoid Ronald Reagan first. Politicians cannot be trusted whether they are really dead or not. And if you see a politician and a snake lying dead, you will also see one thing, there will be skid marks in front of the snake, not in front of the politician.
Beloved Bhagwan, what is the hidden mystery in the silence between the pages in front of you?
Prem Maharaj, all that I want to say to you is in my gaps. The words I use only to create gaps. So when I am simply looking at the pages, I am giving you a chance to receive the message which cannot be said in words, which can be only relayed, transferred in utter silence. There is an ancient proverb, people will believe anything if you whisper it. Particularly if you want the women to hear anything, whisper it. But I go one step further. If you really want to express the truth, don't say anything about it. Just leave the gap. Let people hear without your saying anything. That's the only way truth has always been transferred from a silent heart to another silent heart. In utter silence is the only possibility to meet, to merge, to share. A joke for you, Prem Maharaj. The purpose of the joke is not the joke. The purpose is the laughter that follows. Because in that laughter, your thinking stops. In that laughter, you are no more mind. And after the laughter, just a little, a small gap, and I can reach to the deepest core of your being. An Englishman, a Frenchman, and a Russian were arguing about the nationality of Adam and Eve. They must have been English. The Englishman offers. After all, only a gentleman would share his last apple with a lady. They surely were French, the Frenchman asserted. They were so hopelessly in love. They could only have been Russian, declared the Russian. Who else would walk around naked, have but one apple to eat between them, and think they were in paradise? Okay, Mani. Thank you.